Hello, everyone. This is episode 71 of Rewatchable. We are here to talk about Avatar: The Last Airbender. We're up to, you know, somewhat of a turning point in season one with the episodes The Great Divide, episode 11, and The Storm, episode 12. So this week we have myself, Natalie, and I'm a super fan. We have another super fan, Mitch, on the show. Hi.
Hey. I'm really excited to get through the first episode so we can get to the second, right?
Yeah, for real. Yeah. And then we have Brittany. Hi, Brittany. She's a newbie fan as well. Hi. And then we have Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hi. You sounded really excited.
I haven't recorded yet with Karen. And as you guys may or may not know, Karen is my life partner in terms of most things in the world. No. Karen is my life partner in terms of Teen Wolf. We started another Teen Wolf podcast together, so we talk, you know, we podcast together every single week, and we talk online every single day, but we haven't done a rewatchable together yet. So I was very excited to have Karen on.
Aw, thanks.
Hi.
Hi.
I've seen you two interact in real life, so it's
yeah,
it comes love to is the real. Point, it does come to the point where I do get tend to think of you guys as a married couple. Like, I think, like... if one of them's doing something, the other will join.
That's so weird because I've known Mitch like probably longer as well, and like, but our group was bigger with Glee Chat. Karen has become a very solid presence in my life, and yeah, I'm not sure if everyone has met everyone, but I've met everyone on this podcast IRL, which is cool. Some on this episode
twice.
Particularly, some of you more than once. Brittany, have you met Mitch in real life?
No.
Okay, so I was like, the circle isn't quite complete, but yeah, everyone else has met someone. Anyway, moving on from that, we have our email address if you ever want to chat to us about any theories or opinions on what we've watched so far, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. The Twitter, which is @re_watchable, or this episode post on Hyperbole as well about this specific episode. If you ever want to talk about any former series of Rewatchable with any of the super fans that were on those shows or any of the new fans that were on those shows, this is my first Rewatchable, but all of the other members who have been on the other shows I know are still happy to yell about Veronica Mars or Firefly whenever they, you know, whenever they want to, really. So feel free to get in touch if you're still catching up on old Rewatchable as well. Episode 11, The Divide. I'll just read the synopsis quickly and then we'll talk about the show because I think there are some opinions there. In this episode of Atla, the gang comes across two feuding tribes that are trying to pass through a giant chasm. An earthbender offers to guide them together, and Aang makes them agree by asking Appa to fly the sick and elderly of each tribe so that the healthy members can travel together in one group. When giant spiders attack, the guide's arms are broken, leaving the group to fend for themselves. Aang has the group ride the spiders to the top of the chasm and solves their 100-year dispute by lying about their ancestors, which... yeah, that's basically true. Basically this episode, the entire episode is they find a canyon. They have to cross the canyon. They get to the other side of the canyon. And we have Katara and Sokka, you know, split up basically. Aang freaks out at the whole group because both parties sneak food into the canyon because of they were told not to because these canyon crawlers will come after them, basically. And they both sneak food in because they assume the other one will. They're a very, like, the tribe is, you know, one of them is very pristine and beautiful, and one of them is all, like, scruffy and messy, and it's kind of like elves versus dwarves in Lord of the Rings or something. And, you know, they've been feuding for ages. They send Sokka with one party and Katara with the other party while Aang looks after the guy with the broken arms. And each of the siblings who'd also been arguing kind of ends up taking the side of one of the tribes because they both have a really different story as to what happened. This is a full-on filler episode that apparently they just needed to stick in before they got to the sort of main points that happened in the next episode, The Storm. I'm pretty sure that this episode is the entire fandom as a collective's worst episode. Like, this is known as most people's least favorite episode of Avatar. So I'll go with you, Mitch, first. Do you agree with that summary, or you got a soft spot for this one, or do you like it at all?
Nostalgia, much like the first generation of Pokemon, had instilled a stronger faith in this episode than it deserved. I was thinking of the cute little animation and of the fun little lines. I mean, much like Pokemon, actually. But it turned out that it really wasn't as fabulous as I remembered.
Karen, how about you to throw to you quickly? First time watching. Karen, if you've ever listened to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, you'll know that Karen likes terrible things. Oh, no, that I'm being mean, but she likes bad movies.
Also
she likes,
truthful.
She likes, like episode 3 was her favorite Star Wars. Like, she likes really, like, she likes things that she knows other people think are cheesy or bad. So I'm curious, did you like this episode?
I did not. Is that, like, thank redeeming?
A little bit. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm sure there are millions of shows, episodes of other shows that are worse than any episode of Atla. Like, it's a high-quality show in general, but this episode for an Atla episode is not anyone's fave, I don't think.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad episode by any means. It was just boring. Like, you could just tell that it was a filler. Nothing really happened to bring the group forward towards their mission, and I think, like, it kind of hit you a little bit over the head with the lesson to be learned. And I was hoping for, like, I think it would have been better if it was a bit of a funnier episode, if they had, like, played with the humor a little bit more. But yeah, it was pretty standard, I think.
I mean, it is for children, I suppose. On this episode particularly is more like one of the real episodes where you're like, okay, this was originally meant to be for small people.
Yeah.
But, oh well. Brittany, how about you? Are you going to shame us all and say that you liked it, or did you not enjoy it that much?
I think I kept a lot more faith, like, at least until the last 5 minutes of it, because I kept hoping that the guide would turn into, like, a Boomy type character and be hilarious, but nothing came of it. He was so boring.
I mean, he was just there, and then he had broken arms, and then that was it, basically.
And then he was like, oh, we're never going to make it out. And I was like, no, be funny.
One of the redeeming qualities of the episode, at least, was the introduction of different animation styles, which is, no major spoilers, but you will see a little bit more of this kind of, like, short portions in different styles, or maybe even like a direct parody of style, like other animation styles, in little bits of other episodes. So what did you think of the different animation in the the different tribes' stories, basically, and then Aang's story with the kind of the chibi guys?
Well, I loved it. That was actually my favorite scene, was the Zhang animation, because I liked the switches that they did, so I'm glad to know that it's going to come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's this one's pretty, like, this one's kind of very, like, Tale of the Three Brothers-ish in terms of part of the episode. But there are going to be moments later on that will have, different animations, some very beautiful ones, actually. So that's something that the show does pretty nicely. Karen, did you have a favorite of the animations?
I think maybe the first one, but I wasn't, like, a huge fan of the different styles within this episode, just because, like, it seemed kind of strange to have an animated show break its style of animation in the middle of it. But at the same time, I liked how the two different perspectives of the two different tribes were animated differently. I thought that really kind of showed how they viewed the situation and sort of, like, where they were coming from. So that was cool. But yeah, it was just weird to me that within an animated show, there was different animation.
It is interesting. I mean, it is a bit of a factor, you know, they would have sat down and kind of made that choice and be like, oh, okay. They kind of often treat it, the show, like it's not animated, if you know what I mean. And I think that's why people really like it for an animated show, that it's written in a way, it's not written from the perspective of being animated, which is kind of cool to me. And I mean, I think that's what led them to sort of do that. They're like, oh, so we're going to have, like, flashbacks in different styles here. But yeah, I don't know. I hope that you'll enjoy the future ones, because one in particular is one of my very favorite parts of the show, but we'll see. Mitch, what did you think of the flashbacks?
Yeah, I gravitated toward those art styles because they remind me of these shorts that are online that are very spoilery, so that no one should watch them, and I will not be discussing the content of them. But they were, I think, just aired on Nickelodeon and perhaps released.
Send
on
them
website.
To me.
Yeah, I'll find them, and I should probably just give them.
I might have seen them, but I can't remember.
I should give them to Brittany to tweet them out. I'm sure there's a good playlist out there on YouTube. But they take the chibi art style, and they have. Almost like a mini spin-off series that's not exactly canonical, but it does have, some canon confirmation, of things that weren't clear in the show. But it's mostly supposed to be as cutesy as you would anticipate with Chibi. But it is in that same style, and I loved it. And that's bending, too. It's really cute. I'll send it to Brittany. She'll tweet it out then.
Mm-hmm. Now, the biggest clincher in this episode is that Aang, he was trying to... He's the Avatar. It's his job to kind of make peace and conflict resolution. This is literally what the Avatar would have flown around the world doing, when he was a proper Avatar, one of the former versions. They would have traveled around, sitting on councils, being the grand priest and overlord of the world or whatever. Aang fixed this situation by lying, basically, which sort of Mitch has put, and seems to join the ranks of Katara's morals. I wasn't on the past couple of episodes. I'm curious. Karen, I haven't recorded with you. What are you thinking of Katara so far?
I mean, I like her. What I have been saying is that for a while there, she was very perfect. And I didn't necessarily like that aspect of her. I wanted her to have some characteristics where she could grow as a person, like her brother and Aang. And so while I enjoyed... seeing that side of her where she didn't always make the right decision, I didn't necessarily like that she lied and she stole and that
I freaking hate her. I absolutely loathe Katara more than a lot of other characters in any show that I've watched because she, to me, she's very much one of those people that, like you said, she's one of those people that has a really, her exterior is to be the good person. But her interior is very selfish and nasty. And she's sort of she doesn't really practice what she preaches. And she's quite young and all of that, which is, fine, whatever. They're all quite young. But she leaves a bad taste in my mouth constantly. Obviously wasn't on that waterbending scroll episode, but I wanted to slap her through the whole thing. and I like characters, whether they're, male, female, side of good, side of bad, that are a bit, they say, oh, I don't care about things. But then they have feelings inside. Katara projects feelings, but then what she covers up inside is that she is very self-centered and a bit nasty. So I'm not a fan of Katara in general. But Aang, do you think that Aang lying about this dispute is comparable to what Katara's been doing? Brittany, how about you? Did you expect this to be a lie when Aang was telling it?
I didn't expect it to be a lie, but I do have a really quick thought on Katara because I also haven't been on the past, three episodes.
Okay, yes.
And I cannot stand her. Every time they meet a new group of people, she's like, this is the Avatar. Look, I'm friends
Shut
with
up.
The Avatar.
Shut
I
okay.
get it. Oh, yeah. My gosh. He's the Avatar. You don't need to make a huge introduction.
I will say, you guys are all familiar with Starkid and a Harry Potter musical. I know that all of you guys are. The oh, my God, Hermione, shut up joke in the first Harry Potter musical is based on Katara. Her character in those shows is very much based, for a fact, is very much based on Katara. So yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. If you go, Karen, once you finish watching Avatar The Last Airbender, if you go back and watch a Harry Potter musical, there are half the jokes in it are from Avatar The Last Airbender.
Really?
Cool. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, she is, I do not like her. Sorry, Brittany, carry on with that. Yeah.
No, that was a good little Easter egg, because now I'm excited to go back and watch the musical after this.
I mean, she's Def's not my fave. And there are definitely there are episodes of her that are great. One of the big reasons why I talking about Zutara versus you don't know much about all the characters yet, but I think everyone's picked up that the shipping is, in the fandom has very much been Katara and Aang versus Katara and Zuko. And the reason that I've never liked Katara and Zuko is because I hate her so much, basically. So Karen and Brittany, I guess, did you expect that to be a lie when Aang was telling the story? And do you think it's sort of comparable to Katara's inner kind of selfishness or anything like that for Aang to have lied?
I don't think so. I mean, I was kind of glad it was a lie because it shows that he, instead of like Katara, because Katara is always making such a big deal, like, Aang is here, it is his job to be the peacekeeper. But you have to remember, he doesn't know how to do that yet. Mm. And if he he's 12, so he's going to find the easiest way as of right now to be like, this, we can end this by me just telling this story about these two little kids. So I actually liked that it was a lie. Like, I didn't think anything less of Aang for lying. It was sort of like, there's a comet coming. I need to learn how to bend all these things. We got to move on. Shut up with
stupid problems. If this is going to pacify you, then the problem clearly wasn't that big in the first place.
Exactly.
So let's just move on.
Exactly.
I suppose so. Mitch, what did you think of the kind of end result of that?
Well, to me, it's kind of hard to see past this episode for anything in legitimacy, because it honestly feels so much like a side quest, you know? It's kind of like, if I didn't watch this, I'd be fine, you know?
Yeah. It is not really a necessary episode at all.
It's kind of like, Aang, gain Phoenix down or something. Like, it's really just, it's like extra armor would have been added if this was an RPG game, and that would have been it. But you could have skipped this chapter and been okay.
Yeah. Very true. I mean, I think that kind of thing is quite, I think that the reason that they do that kind of thing on this kind of show is, I mean, remember watching Nickelodeon when you were a kid? I didn't even know that, like, shows had, like, a series with a start to a finish, if you know what I mean. Like, it was very much, you'd watch a single episode and it would be a single story and you didn't really know that there was a progressing story throughout the series. I'm talking about like when I was like under 10 or whatever. Maybe other people did, but I certainly didn't when I was kind of that age. So I think it's, if a show is catering to that kind of audience, that, you know, even though they do have such a solid story that's going to make people want, oh, I need to watch Avatar, it's also good for like just, oh, you flicked over and you're watching something from start to finish and you mm-hmm. don't need to know anything mm-hmm. about it. So I think that might be a bit of a factor as to why they're like, he's the Avatar. Here he is. Let's solve a problem, if you know what I mean. So I get that. It's a bit annoying watching it as a series having that. But, yeah, I think it's very specially designed for the exact opposite of watching it as a series, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that. Yeah. We're watching a cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy to say, you know, like, oh, you know, it's not, you know, good in terms of storytelling, but for a cartoon that most people would just have been flicking by, it is fantastic in terms of storytelling, with the occasional episode thrown in that doesn't really, you know, need to be there for the overall plot. And I guess the final bit, we haven't spent very long on this episode because it's not very good, which is fine. We're going to do our quotes and our favourite moments, though. But the final, I guess, talking point there is, why did the gang need to involve themselves with anything that happened? Like, is that just part of Aang's responsibility? Like, is that sort of him learning what it is? Or should have they just been like, fine, we'll just wait our turn to cross the canyon, or we'll fly with Appa, you guys just whatever. Should have they just left it alone? What?
No, it's just funny because, like, the way you presented it is exactly how I thought. Just, like, sure. Fine, whatever. We're going to fly with Appa. You guys have fun, like, hating each other. We're done.
I mean, that is sort of the Avatar's job, though, right? To keep peace. And yeah. So I can see why they got involved. I think that's fine. My whole issue is that the resolution wasn't really a resolution. I mean, it was for the two tribes because they came together, they realized they didn't actually hate each other and whatever, but Aang lied in order to make that happen. So therefore, he didn't get any better at his skills of bringing peace between people who are arguing.
I mean, he's just a really spiritual politician. So it's kind of, you know, I bet that lots of people, you know, it's like, it's kind of very like King Solomon-y. Like, he wasn't really going to cut the baby in half, if you know what I mean. It was, you know, like, it's, it's, I think that I think that lying is a necessary tactic for conflict resolution, which doesn't sound great, but I think that it is. And it was quite harmless, but it also doesn't mean that he's gotten any better at, you're right. He didn't actually solve the problem, but clearly no one remembers how crappy the, you know, like, clearly the problem isn't actually still relevant. So, yeah. Basically, does it matter that he lied? Like, I don't know. Like, Karen,
does it matters sort of... to me.
Okay. Brittany, how about you?
No, it doesn't matter that he lied. I think it just showed how far he still kind of has to go, because he is 12 and solving these problems.
Yeah, I think it's quite dumb. I think the whole thing about him lying was, it was quite a dumb resolution for quite a dumb problem, I suppose. Like, if they maybe didn't deserve a better resolution than that because they were so annoying.
that makes sense.
But, I mean, we did learn, I guess, that they both of them were refugees, Earth Kingdom refugees, on their way to Ba Sing Se, which is, you know, the protected capital of the Earth Kingdom that's not under Fire Nation rule. So we've heard a few little tidbits about Ba Sing Se so far, and hopefully we will hear a few more about that in the future. Because we've had King Bumi, but he's not, like, the king of the whole Earth Kingdom. He's just, like, the king of one city or whatever. So I'm very confused as to how that works. I'm also confused as to how King Bumi became king when he was a street kid, but maybe it's, like, a voted king or something. I don't know. I've asked this question before and I still have no answers. Okay, so just quickly, I mean, this episode didn't have much, like, it didn't have that much different storylines. It was all very much, you know, point A to point B along the same story, but did you have any favorite scenes from this episode? Mitch, how about you?
Yes, I did. My favorite scene was this cute little panda referee in Aang's made-up story, because that does fit along with Aang's imagination of what he would imagine toddlers having, I guess. And it makes me wonder if there really are, like, these walking, talking, thinking pandas going around. We didn't see it talk, but I guess I can imagine it being bipedal, that it might have that ability too.
You know, I didn't even think twice about that. I just kind of accepted that.
I did too. I was like, that's cool. Oh, well, logically, yeah, a panda obviously would referee this match.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Aang's doing a pretty good job making up that story, like, on the go.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, just the way he studied, he was like, hang on, I know those guys. Like, he did think on his feet really fast with the lying. He made it pretty convincing, actually. So that was, you know, good for him, I suppose. He's got a career in politics. And Brittany, one of yours was the animation as well, wasn't it? Like a one of the,
yeah,
moments.
I really, cause I thought that especially the Zhang animation, it really, like, I didn't notice the first animation shift, to be completely honest. And then the second one, I was like, oh, this kind of matches, like, their scruffy, rough on the edges style, like, of the way the tribe is. So I liked the switch in the animation. And then looking at the third animation, it sort of fit Aang's mind, where it's, like, very childish and playful, yeah, and Panda walks in and has a little, yeah, whistle, so.
The animation is quite literally the only redeeming thing of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I had such trouble picking a favorite scene. I'm like, I'm just gonna go with the animation shifts.
Yes, yeah. I think we all did, actually, didn't we?
Mm. It's like when a house isn't, like, very nice inside, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's got a great view, or there's great scenery, like, you know, like on a real estate listing, and it's like, oh, the inside of the house is crap.
Or probably more relevant, it's like the M. Night Shyamalan movie, that it's horrible in all their aspects, but it's like, it has great CGI.
Oh, cool, yeah. And then, Karen, what was yours?
Mine was when Aang had his happy face and his big eyes when he sees food, because it's basically me.
Is there custard in that tart? Yeah, that was actually my other moment, that if someone hadn't picked that, I was going to pick that, but you picked it, so that's fine. But mine was actually Aang using logic to kind of use, you know, ride the canyon crawlers out of the, you know, the situation. And then I was like, oh my god, but now those big things are, like, free into the world. And then he's like, nope, gonna throw the food back, so they all go back. And I'm like, that was actually pretty well done. And this episode was one of the few episodes that I actually found myself siding with Aang the whole way through. I mean, the lying and the story was dumb, but, like, usually I'm just like, Aang, your solutions are annoying. You're quite silly. Just, you know, whatever. But this I was like, okay, yeah, Katara and Sokka are both being slightly ridiculous, and Aang is the only one who sees that this is dumb. You know, when the kids both came back in and they were, you know, on the side of, you know, whichever respective team they'd been part of, I guess, or tribe or whatever. How about favorite lines? Brittany, yours just kind of ties into what I was going to say. It was one of the ones I was going to pick as well, actually.
So when they're listening, after they had heard the both sides of the story and they're realizing that they, like, Sokka needs to apologize to Katara, he says, I only took their side because they fed me.
Yeah, I was going to pick that one as well. Yeah, because I did find that quite funny that they both got caught up in it. But mine was actually from the beginning and when they would, you know, Katara was being like, we have to do the conflict resolution. Aang is the Avatar. That's his job. And Sokka's just like, his job's going to make us cross this whole thing on foot, isn't it? Which, yeah, pretty much. I would have just gotten in the flying buffalo and been like, yeah, see you. You people are...
Problems
are too petty and tiny for me. Like, yeah.
Why would Sokka and Katara even bother following along? Let alone Momo. Yeah. Well, I guess Momo kind of hangs out with everyone. But there are moments when, like, it's just Momo and Appa.
Yeah. Karen, how about you?
Mine was just when Aang said, but to be honest, I'm not sure. Then again, when have I ever been? And he kind of just smiled this really funny smile. And it was just, I mean, it's kind of a light line, but at the same time, I think it goes a little bit deeper because he really has no idea what he's doing. And I mean, I guess at least he can admit it.
Yeah. And Mitch, how about you?
My favorite line is Aang's to Appa and Momo with, come on, Momo, that's fair. Appa's got 5 stomachs with the splitting of the melon. I was like, oh, that's cute. That's intense. 5 stomachs? I think cows have 3, right?
I don't know. Something. Appa's rather large, though.
What's the benefit of having more than one stomach? I really don't understand.
It's not more than one stomach. It's that it's different parts of the stomach that digest it differently. I don't know. It's to do with eating a lot of grass.
How do they feed Appa? Do they have just, like, hay on hand? Because he's a big animal. He must go hunting or something. Is he like a carnivore? I don't know what's going on with him.
I don't think he's a carnivore, but I don't know. He grazes. I don't know. He's magic. He doesn't need food.
Well, yeah, grass would work, I guess, because he's a bison, so.
But he's very big. He would take a lot. Just in the final situation for the Great Divide, I suppose, just out of curiosity, if you had to pick, not a side, but if you were going to join the beautiful elvish, vampire-ish, elegant Ganjing, or the messy, scruffy, dwarf, werewolfy, Zhang tribes, with the kind of bitchy leading man or the pigtaily leading woman, which tribe would you join, guys?
I would join the Zhang, only because I'm always hungry and I always like to be warm when I sleep. So they fit my criteria.
How about you, Mitch?
Yeah, I'm with Zhang. I couldn't be with that kind of a hoity-toity of a group. I would need to be with someone a little bit more rough and tough to get along as vagabond as they were.
Karen?
Yeah, I think I'd agree, actually, because the other ones just seem super stuck up.
Yeah, and I'll probably agree as well. But, you know, maybe if they start interbreeding or whatever is going to happen now, then, you know, stuff will become a bit more chill, possibly. But, yeah, I would agree. I felt like it wasn't portrayed that much as, like, an equal split, if you know what I mean. It wasn't portrayed as, like, oh, these people have their good qualities and these people have their... and these people have their good qualities. They really did seem, from my perspective, to be, you know, one nice one and one nasty one, but oh well.
I really like that lady, too, the lady leader. She was really cool.
Yeah.
Because she you know what she reminds me of? She sounds like the voice of the nanny from The Parent Trap. She has the same kind of personality, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like, whatever.
She probably makes great chili.
Yes.
That's not from
The Parent Trap. Let you eat while you unpack.
Oh my god, that's from It Takes Two.
I love It Takes Two.
No, I think that's from It Takes Two, which, oh my god, I've had, like, long conversations with people about It Takes Two versus The Parent Trap, because I used to watch It Takes Two, like, so, like, you don't know how many times.
No, 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 Jesse, it's Jesse from The Parent Trap, because she lives with, what's his name? Dennis Quaid, yeah.
I don't know. There's chili in It Takes Two as well. This is very confusing. Really? They're both set at camp.
No, they have Sloppy Joes.
Oh, God. All right. Yeah.
I don't know. No, I'm like the biggest fan of The Parent Trap. I've never even heard of It Takes Two.
Okay. It's older than The Parent Trap. I remember The Parent Trap coming out of the movies, whereas It Takes Two was already on video. And you're a bit younger than me, Mitch, so you might not remember it at all. It's the Olsen twins. It's very much like The Parent Trap. It's two kids meet at camp. They look the same. They swap places. One of them's rich. You know, one of them's like a foster kid, basically. I think it turns out that they're not actually twins. They just happen to look exactly the same.
Spoiler alert.
But it's, I mean, they never think they're twins. They never kind of go into that. But it's and you know, and then they all become a family and whatever. And it's the Olsen twins. And I used to watch it so much when I was a child. So much. You've got to go.
Oh, the scrapyard scenes. I have it on VHS.
My God. I'm going to download it. I'm going to try and, like, it's so good. It's so good. And you better leave this in so that all the rewatchable people can weigh in about whether they like It Takes Two or the Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap. Yeah. See, the Lindsay, because I know the Parent Trap is based on a way old movie, like from the, like, 50s or 60s with, oh, I can't remember what her name is, that child actress, Haley something. And so I knew the Parent Trap existed, but because It Takes Two came out before the Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap, I always thought that the Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap was, like, a cheap ripoff of It Takes Two, basically. So, yeah. And there are really two of them in It Takes Two, whereas Lindsay Lohan must have been, like, bored as hell, like, filming against herself and not actually having, like, a friend to hang out with.
That movie technically just, like, baffles me. I don't understand, however, they do that double thing where, like, they CG in it so perfectly that you don't see any of, like, mess-ups. Like, for the day and time that movie was made, I think it was the late 90s, wasn't it, for Parent Trap, or early 2000s? Like, that CGI had to have been, like, Oscar winning or something, because that's intense. And even I think Lindsay Lohan does a good job of acting to herself. But I mean, enough of Parent Trap, my god, well, we could go on forever about that, I know.
So moving on to episode 12, The Storm, which is kind of the opposite of filler in my opinion. In this episode of Atla, we learn more about the backstories of Aang and Zuko. In need of money, Sokka goes out to sea to help a fisherman. However, a big storm hits, also hindering Zuko's tracking of the Avatar. While Sokka's at rough seas, Aang tells Katara of how he was first told that he was the Avatar. The Air Monks told him earlier than they had originally wanted to because of the looming 100-year war. And upset at the pressures of being the Avatar at such a young age, Aang flew away on Appa, eventually falling into the depths of the harsh sea and encasing himself in the giant ice ball. Iroh recounts to Zuko's crew of a time when the young Fire Nation prince wanted to see the goings-on of a war meeting. Zuko talked out of line, I'll just add in here, because he was being compassionate and a good person, as opposed to sacrificing a whole bunch of soldiers, and was forced into an Agni Kai duel with his Fire Lord father. Ozai strikes a remorse Zuko with a harsh hit of fire, giving the prince his iconic scar, which the crew members thought he got in a training accident. As Aang finishes his story, the fisherman's partner finds him and Katara and asks them to go save Sokka and the fisherman. As Aang rescues the two at sea, him and Zuko spot each other. Appa flies up into the eye of the storm and Zuko spots him, but he apologizes for bringing the crew into the storm and, you know, stops chasing the Avatar for the sake of the safety of the crew. This episode is very much a parallel between Aang and Zuko. And I don't think it's too spoilery to say that it very much sets up that these are the two stories you're going to be following. Like, Zuko's not just following around the Avatar, if you know what I mean. That it's, you know, he has his own story and then Aang has his own story, and it's a parallel. Hopefully that's not too much of a spoiler. Should I not say that?
No, I kind of got that sense anyway.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's the situation, basically, or that's how I would read this episode. And I mean, did you, was that something you guys were kind of getting before this episode directly laid that down, or what were you thinking of Zuko, I guess, prior to this episode versus now? I'll go Karen first.
I mean, I definitely got the sense that he was an important character, and it sounded like he had a bit of a backstory, so I figured that going forward we would just, you know, kind of learn more about that.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Brittany, in terms of Zuko? I know you said you had some thoughts that you were saving for the episode about this one.
Well, I didn't like Zuko to begin with. And I know I'm learning. Like, I posted in the group a while ago, like when I was catching up on episodes, mm-hmm. and Zuko like showed up behind Katara. Like, I don't even like Zuko and Katara together. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're in the same space.
Oh no.
But it wasn't even because I liked them. It was just, you guys have gotten in.
You're like, oh, this is meant to be exciting.
Exactly. I'm like, I should be excited by this. But anyway, this episode.
That's really cute, because I remember actually, Brittany, you also pretended to act like a super fan when you were like, oh, let's just skip over the Great Divide. I'm just acting like a super fan right now, guys.
Like, I guess I totally don't need to spend a lot of time on that.
And right you were.
Anyway, well, I knew, like, I think they mentioned it earlier that Zuko was trying to prove something to his father, but I thought it was just to get the Avatar, and that turned out to be correct, but I didn't know how severe his relationship with his father, like, had turned. So it was interesting to find out that where he got the scar, and that it was at the hands of his own father, and how he begged not to fight him, but then it really, that whole story really emphasized, like, the honor and different life that the Fire Nation, like, lives by, and how honor becomes more important than, like, striking down your own family. Plus, in the first episode, when someone brought up to me, they were like, you didn't think anything of his scar? And I thought it was paint, so...
Yeah, that I think that paint. Was me, and I think someone in the comments was like, you shouldn't even have mentioned that it was Scar. If she didn't know it was Scar, you're spoiling too much. And I was like, oh, sorry.
I was like, I thought that was, oops, like, face paint. Okay. It was a scar.
You know, we also should note that his hairline has changed, and I don't want to comment any more on anything else of Zuko's hair, which sounds odd. But it, to me, it's almost like, and Natalie, this is for you. Zuko's kind of like a hairbender. He can do a lot of things with his hair.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. If we look at the flashback, he has, you know,
he has a lot of hair.
Yeah, he's got long hair, and now he has a very severe haircut. And maybe, you know, the softer Zuko gets, the more beautiful and flowing his hair is.
Oh, I thought,
well,
it was
maybe.
Well, my question is that a repercussion of his fire bending,
like a spot? Punishment or something? Or...
No. If it's just that his hairline doesn't grow there anymore because the follicles were killed in this fire attack.
I don't think I can answer that question, Mitch, without...
Yes.
Okay, what I'm going to say, all I'm going to say in answer to that question is this show has a pretty good sense of realism in that hair grows. Like, you see people with different hair at different time because hair grows. And that's not even in reference to one specific character. For example, like other characters that might need to shave or something like that. Like, you see hair growing. So I can't comment on Zuko's hairline right now, Mitch, basically.
Well, I think a safe analogy is to say, in your shaving, if Sokka didn't shave his beard, we would see it in the show, but since he wants to, he does.
Yeah. Like, if it's not just that Sokka doesn't have a beard, it's that he, you know, shaves, and if he didn't shave, he would have, you know, stuff.
Which is oddly realistic for a cartoon, because it's like, sometimes you're watching a show, like, I know there's a trope in, like, I think Doug, that Nickelodeon cartoon, of his closet being full of that same, like, green vest.
Yeah, I was like, even though they wear the same clothes every day,
Right, and I mean, wearing the same clothes, to me, kind of speaks more of, we're just on, we're traveling, these are the only things that we could, like, fit in our packs, and we kind of just wash them out as we go along. And, I mean, I guess if we're looking at that time period in on planet Earth of, like, Eurasian cultures, I don't think that they would look down upon wearing the same outfit as much as...
Especially not, like, outer clothes. They'd probably have really heavy, like especially the waterbending clothes, they'd probably be, like, a really heavy outer thick, garment, and then probably have, like, you know, like, cotton undergarments that would be changed or whatever.
Well, I imagine it like how, for instance, Korra, without spoiling anything, kind of wears like a fur coat around her waist at all times, because that's her dress that she wears. You know, I mean, if everyone's seen her character design, that's why I'm saying it's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of like you can imagine her layers of her clothes, kind of like what Katara would wear, maybe like a tank top in warmer weather.
Mm. Anyway, that's all a bit superficial. Anyway, I don't know why we're talking about Zuko's hair, but yeah, his hairstyle right now is incredibly harsh, and it makes him look a lot harsher than it did in the flashback where he was like young and cute and beautiful. And I think that they've mentioned that Zuko's 16 and that he's been doing this for 3 years. So he was only 13 when he came into that war meeting and he spoke out about, you know, not killing all of their people and had that duel with his father. So, I mean, do you think that he was right for that Zuko, like young baby Zuko, was right for, you know, speaking out about what he did?
I think so.
It's definitely like, I think this is an episode where it's the turning point for people about whether they like Zuko or not. Like, whether, you know, regardless that he's chasing the Avatar or whatever, they kind of know why, and they know sort of a little bit more about his natural heart and his natural thoughts, and they decide whether they like him or not. So, Brittany and Karen, what are your thoughts on him after this episode? Are you still sort of... you don't really like him, or are you like, oh, this poor baby, or are you still waiting to see?
I think I'm still waiting, only because I like Iroh. I mean, I've always liked Iroh, but I like him a little bit more in this episode just because of the role he's taken in Zuko's life, and he understands that he needs to grow up a little bit, and he's being really patient with him. But I did start to, like I think this episode intended, started to turn more on Zuko's side, not necessarily against Aang, but just in favor of his character when he decided not to go after the Avatar and sort of take care of his crew.
Karen? Yeah, I mean, Zuko, like, I never really hated him. I figured that he was one of those characters where in the beginning he, you know, had his issues and stuff, but maybe as time progresses, maybe he doesn't change, but our view of him changes and we know why he's doing what he's doing. So I've always been very open-minded about him, and I think that learning this backstory, where he got his scar and who gave it to him, was definitely something that, I don't know, made me care a bit more about his past as well.
That was definitely, I know that they were kind of sitting around when they were originally like plotting out the characters. They kind of knew what they wanted, you know, with him, or they knew sort of vaguely that they didn't want him to be, you know, the flat out, haha, I'm a bad guy kind of thing. And they sort of didn't know how to make it happen, like how to give him the compassion. And then one of the two creators, they were like, what if his father gave him the scar? Because the father is the big bad, you know, the Fire Lord is the big bad at the moment. So if the Fire Lord is against Zuko and Zuko's our villain, what does that kind of make you think about Zuko, if you know what I mean? It's a bit of a, like, if the big bad also is against Zuko, then, you know, you've got to wonder what that means about, you know, who Zuko is or what Zuko is. So that was the turning point for them with Zuko's character, deciding that his father gave him the scar and that the father had banished him, basically. So
Natalie, because it's really easy, I think, at this point to just think Zuko is the big bad. He's the one coming after the Avatar. But that if you look past that, you can see, like you're saying, that, Ozai is kind of hidden right now. And try not to be spoilery about it, and I hope that I wasn't just. And I don't think I was, though, because, I mean, it's kind of just like we understand that he's, like, the overlord of the world right now. He's destroying cultures, and he's killing entire races and stuff. Like, he's an intense guy.
and this is giving you the idea, I guess, that, you know, it's not like Zuko is on a mission from his father. Like, you know, he's the trusted... You know, he's the trusted heir to the throne sent to do an important mission, if you know what I mean. That's not what's going on here. So, is that something that people were thinking before now? Like, was it kind of known that he was, because he's been, like, not allowed into fire. You knew he was banished, right? Like, that was a thing that they'd mentioned before episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be a whole different story if he was just in charge of the mission on behalf, like if he was drinking his father's Kool-Aid, if you know what I mean. But we see that he got kicked out basically for not drinking his father's Kool-Aid. So, you know, gives you a little bit of hope there maybe, or a little bit of curiosity about, you know, well, we know that Iroh is a, you know, compassionate and nice person, and like not all Fire Nation people are the same. And we've seen that Zuko is not particularly willing to do harm, like, you know, to random stuff that gets in his way. So.
And it's going to be really interesting when we finish this whole series to explore what you're saying right now, to see how he became the person that he was before Ozai gave him that scar. You know, what brought it to even that point? Because there's more backstory that we need to learn. And I think it's going to be really cool once I think everyone... starts thinking about the thing that everyone was wondering about watching the show for the first time around, if you know what I mean, Natalie.
The
big question. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, like Brittany and Natalie and Brittany and Karen, that is, thinking about what I'm thinking about.
because Zuko is, you know, obviously, yeah, he had those opinions that were very, you know, that of a good person, basically. So, and he's, you know, moment just really hung up on, like, you know, getting back the honor that he thinks that he's lost by shaming his father or whatever. But maybe, you know, maybe he will learn that other things are more important, or maybe he will turn fully evil. But, you know, I always found this episode interesting for the fact that he, you know, you do get that story, and that basically you find out that, you know, Fire Lord, who is our big enemy, also not a big fan of Zuko, and has sent him off. So, you know, it sort of tells you something about Zuko, I think.
Well, Natalie, while we're still kind of on Ozai, I want to ask the newbies what they think Ozai's mission is to do right now, and I want to point toward evidence, not to sway your opinion, but to present what's making me ask you guys this, because I'm kind of curious myself too. And it's from the fact that he completely annihilated the Airbenders. I mean, this is called The Last Airbender, you know, as if he maybe thought they were a threat or something. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me what he's doing, because he keeps the earth and waterbenders alive, but then completely annihilates the air. So, if from your perspective right now, Karen and Brittany, or I guess Karen first, what's your idea of what Ozai's mission is?
I have no idea, to tell you the truth. I mean, we really don't know anything about him other than he's this really bad dude. And I wouldn't even be able to guess at this point. I don't think I have enough information.
And Brittany?
I'm kind of in the same boat as Karen. I really have no clue what he wants to do. I mean, he kind of lurks in the background, and the military generals are plotting, but they're not plotting, like you said, to destroy anything. They're just like, I think when Zuko speaks up, they're just plotting to like take out an entire Earth village, but they're not, it didn't seem to be part of a bigger plan to eliminate like the Earth bending capital or anything.
Right.
So like, I feel like there's such small missions for an unknown greater goal.
I was about to ask you if you were, I guess, even looking from their perspective, from what we know right now, how do you interpret Ozai's actions as to his ulterior motive?
I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I think that air is the opposite element to fire. Like if you, on the kind of in the Avatar cycle, I think air is the direct opposite. I can't remember if I'm incorrect, but I think I'm right. And
yes, you're correct.
Yeah, and so maybe the airbenders were the biggest threat, and like the waterbenders and earthbenders could stick around and be like slaves or something. Like we've seen them, you know, we've seen the earthbenders sort of being on prison ships and stuff. But if air is the biggest maybe threat to their power because it's the opposite on the Avatar cycle, I don't know. Sorry, what was that? What was that, Brittany? Well,
why would they? If they would have destroyed the airbenders, like annihilated them first because they were next in line for the Avatar. So they wanted to end with the firebender Avatar on top. So maybe that's why they don't need to rush, because if they've already wiped out the airbenders, then there's no threat of the airbender coming.
That is a good point, actually. They may have been wiping them out in order to try and kill the Avatar. I have literally never thought of that before as the reason the airbenders were all annihilated, because I didn't honestly I didn't back 100 years ago, I don't know whether they were trying to end, I can't remember if they were trying to end the Avatar or not. I don't know whether Ozai actually wants the Avatar or if he's just sent Zuko on a fool's mission, if you know what I mean. Like I don't know how much the firebenders, I think it does come up, but I genuinely can't remember at this point how much the Fire Nation actually cares about the Avatar, or if Zuko's mission is just like a dud, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because
like
right now,
something to get him out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, because right now when they cast out Zuko, they didn't even know that Aang was back yet, right?
Find the lost Avatar, like find the Avatar. You know, like,
because
you know,
well, because they had to know that the Avatar was around, because didn't in that like episode where they go to the Fire Temple, like he like glows, and didn't the like guards say that they knew that that's how the Avatar was around?
Yeah, I don't know. At this point, I can't remember whether the Fire Nation has an aim to actually you know, get rid of the Avatar, or if they've just sent Zuko to get him out of the way. But if they were, yeah, getting rid of the airbenders, if they knew that the next Avatar was going to be air, that does make sense, which sucks. Like, killing a whole nation of people just to get rid of one dude. But, like, yeah, okay.
I was thinking of something that Brittany was mentioning of annihilating the airbenders to then... I guess just kill off the Avatar in effect, because it's kind of just like I can't find the spiders, so I'm gonna burn down the house. but to me, it doesn't make sense, because the next in the line is the Water Tribes. So would they just then kill all of the waterbenders?
Well, they've got like 100 years or whatever to do that. I don't know. They have gotten rid of. They have taken, like, they did take all of the waterbenders. Like, did they not? They killed all the waterbenders, or, like, because there was no benders left in the South Pole.
Yeah, there was no benders in the South Pole.
Right, right. That's a good point. And then, I don't know, it's just weird. It's kind of like, it makes you wonder, and I'm excited for us to get on this Aang story, because about it being destiny, so, I mean.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
because
obviously
in parallel to Zuko's whole backstory, what you know, and we learn about how he got where he is, we learn about Aang and what happened to him, because they, you know, it's he gets faced by that guy. It's like, oh, the Avatar, you know, don't look so smiley, you deserted us, kind of thing. And Katara's like, it's not your fault, you didn't mean to do that, etc. And Aang's like, well, I kind of did. So we hear about his relationship with Monkey Yatso, his guardian at the Air Temple. We don't really know, like, who his parents were, like, if he was just destined to be a monk, if people just give their babies to the temple and like that. They didn't seem to – you didn't really see any, like, how that happens, but
– Well, what about females? They're like, only males that are airbenders right now?
I think there are females, or at least I know I've seen imagery of females. They also have shaved heads, though, so maybe some of the people were female and we didn't know.
That's a very good point, and that relates to something that we're not going to mention, that you know what I'm talking about, I'm sure, by maybe just saying that.
Maybe.
I hope you caught it. I can't say anymore. I'll talk to you later about it.
I think
no
I
comment.
Do know. I think I know. But yeah, anyway, so if there were females, I'm pretty sure they're all monks too or something. So I don't really know how that works. But anyway, so he finds out he's the Avatar because they know that like big drama is happening. And then they say he has to go and like learn all the other elements, which is fair enough. Usually the Avatar finds out when, you know, they're 16, they haven't accidentally like bended water or something before that. Like, some people might be different. And know from a very early age, hint, hint, but Aang is, didn't know, wasn't aware, had only airbended, and he apparently chose these Avatar toys that mean he's the Avatar, and as soon as that happens, people start treating him differently, like his, the monks are all like, you must train and become the proper Avatar, and the kids are like, you can't play with us because you're the Avatar, and Monk Gyatso, his guardian, is the only person who keeps treating him normally. And because of that, they decide that they have to separate him, like, to stop him being distracted. Basically, they're like, no, he must go and to other places where he will only be the Avatar and not be, a child. Aang overhears this, and then he goes running off, basically. Even though Monk Gyatso comes to him in bed and is like, don't worry, Aang, I won't let them take you away. Aang's already gone. He's ridden up or off, I'm like, I don't know how the solution of being taken away from your, like, monk father is to run away from your monk father, but maybe he was just going out, like, because he was mad and he was going to come back or something, if you know what I mean. Anyway.
If you think about it, like, a little kid would just kind of, I don't know, like, Harry Potter in Prisoner of Azkaban didn't really seem like he was going anywhere. He just kind of left. I'm sure he'd have to come back to the Dursleys eventually.
Yeah, that's true. So he goes off and that's when he gets trapped in the storm. And then he, goes into the iceberg, basically, like his Avatar powers form that thing around him and Appa to basically protect him. I don't think it was like a Steve Rogers situation where he like just got in an iceberg. He formed that himself. What?
Nothing. I like talking about Steve Rogers.
I'm wearing. Right now, Karen, I'm wearing Captain America suit stealth hoodie, the limited edition from Comic-Con that someone bought me and sent me, actually. Like his blue suit hoodie. Yeah, my friend Jen was just like, oh my god, I'm in the line. If you want one, I'll just get one. And I was like, okay. And then I got a tweet from a lady being like, lol, I got you the hoodie. And I was like, okay, that's good. I wasn't expecting that, but now I have it.
And as the only Avengers non-fan, I just had to Google who Steve Rogers was before you said Captain America.
Oh my god.
I'm the worst hypeable staff member.
No, you're not. You're not. But I feel sad for you.
There are worse.
I feel who? Name names. No, we're not gonna do that.
Karen is anxiously awaiting for me to watch Iron Man 3. Just waiting.
Well, see, yeah, because there's some superheroes that are like, whatever, you're boring, but oh my god, the emotional complexity of Steve Rogers is really important to me. Like, it's really important.
I still need to power through Iron Man first before I hit Captain America.
But they're in order. They don't go like they're interspersed with each other. It's all part of the same. They're all sequels to each other. They're not separate series.
I know. Let's talk about Aang.
Let's talk about Aang. Aang. Like Steve Rogers, lived in the iceberg, but Aang, unlike Steve Rogers, created the iceberg or whatever it was around himself out of his Avatar powers, which I guess preserved him, like the Avatar spirit, which is nice, and it was kind enough to preserve Appa as well. That's cool. It would suck if he woke up and the bison was just, like, frozen and dead, right? Like, how sad would that be?
Well, not anyway. Even talking biologically, I'm assuming this is something to do with, like, Avatar magic stuff, but would you really be able to be frozen and then reincarnated?
No science, unrewatchable.
Is that, like, a rule or something?
We tried to do so much science on Pushing Daisies, and it doesn't work. No science. I'm
shuddering at meat pies. I wish we resolved that one.
What? Ew. Are you talking about him touching meat and the meat coming to life?
Unfortunately,
yes. A lot of things, yes.
Oh, no. Stop. No, okay, no. Anyway. Oh, no. No!
This is just like, I don't eat meat, and then I kind of, like, went into it, and I was like, that's really because it'll come alive, right, guys? And
yeah, no, it was like, so bad.
All right.
No science, unwatchable.
All right, can't do that. Can't be having that. Anyway, Were you were you expecting that? Like, I don't know what you were expecting about Aang's backstory. I guess, like, it's quite, you know, quite unusual. We had no idea what to expect, but, you know, when, you know, Katara was like, "Oh, it's not your fault," did you sort of expect that to be true, or did you think that maybe it was, you know, Aang's choice or something like that?
I was kind of glad it turned out to be Aang's choice. I thought that we were going to go in the direction where it wasn't his choice, like he got sent off and just happened to be protected when, like, something was going down. But I'm kind of glad it was his choice, only because it put a darker spin on it. Like, even...
Yeah, like a guilt opening, element. Like,
yeah, and even from the opening credits, like, where he's having the nightmare, like, you could tell that this episode was going to be a darker twist, and I'm glad that both of their stories had this darker element to it, where they both have some sort of guilt, whereas Zuko, like, spoke out against his father, and he's still trying to redeem himself for that, and Aang is trying to deal with every time Katara annoyingly introduces him as, hey, it's the Avatar. It's sort of like this little punch to his gut, it's being like, yeah, like, I am the Avatar, and I ran away from everyone saying that, and now look at where it's got me.
Karen, how about you?
I see, this is kind of what I was saying before we recorded. I mean, this episode, I feel like it was really significant, and I think it's part of what some of you guys were saying on the last episode. I think especially Mikal, she was like, I want all the newbies to be on this one, and I want to know what they think about everything. So I was really sort of hyped up for this one and a little let down because nothing in this episode seemed shocking to me or like really revealing. I kind of guessed like generally some of the things that happened. I don't think that's from knowing some spoilers because the things that I know are not really significant. So I don't know. I mean, I like Brittany, I'm glad that they decided to go in a slightly darker direction and that it was kind of Aang's fault that he disappeared. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of like, I don't really have a lot of thoughts about it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I also, yeah, I think that the guilt and the kind of shame element is sort of, I guess, a fun one to put in there for with him having to sort of face up to being the Avatar. I mean, it's not exactly like he chose to throw himself in the ice and run away for 100 years. He's obviously super bummed that, like, all his friends are dead and stuff like that. But, you know, he was except running... Except Boomy.
sorry.
No, but he was running away, you know, from the whole situation, and that was kind of sad. I don't know what I expected. Mitch, do you remember what you thought of this the first time you watched it?
You know, honestly, I'm finding myself wondering what I'm sure I was originally. Who was the first evil Fire Lord, and who, like, taught Ozai? And I don't know that I remember that properly, so it's going to be, to me...
Oh, I do.
So it's going to be really interesting. I think I kind of half remember it. To me, that's what I'm most thinking about, because I want to see Aang's kind of reaction to Ozai in their inevitable meeting when we kind of see, like, so you've carried on XYZ's work. Because I just want to think of that, you know what I mean? And that's more interesting to me.
Did he
even
know, like, when they were telling Aang about the war, did he even know, like, really what was going on with the Fire, like, Fire Nation? Because he didn't know the Fire Nation was evil by the time when he woke up. He's like, oh my god, Fire Nation have done what? Like, what? I have friends in the Fire Nation. Right. What? They're not
yeah,
evil.
He woke
they're
up
all
and
in
definitely
harmony.
Found out.
Like, you know, like,
right.
So I don't know how much he knew about the previous Fire Lord, but because that's obviously not the Fire Lord from 100 years ago. So mm-hmm. I do remember kind of what happened there. So,
Well, that's good, because I can kind of be a newbie in that part. But to me, I also wonder, did the Airbenders interact with a lot of other people? Did they, I guess the best way
I
of
mean,
saying this is breed with other types
so...
of people? Or is it just that, like you're saying, like, here's my baby, they airbend, take the monks? I don't know. It's just strange to me that all of the Airbenders were in one little place and that Aang
yeah.
just happened in a way so that the Avatar cycle could continue for believing in destiny. It just... It's kind of a perplexing complex going on.
I will say, without spoiling too much, I think at this point in the show, this point in their universe, there isn't too much interbreeding of different nations. And I think that if you watch Korra, you see a world that has developed in that direction, basically. Like, the time has passed in the same way that it really did in the real world, where, you know, the world gets smaller as time passes and technology advances and stuff like that, you know? Like, so I think that that actually shows the progression in that universe. But at this point, it's pretty pretty segregated. Though Aang, I mean, Aang has mentioned, like, you know, knowing all of these places, you know, he's, you know, oh, yeah, let's go to that bay and ride the fish, you know, like, and that's all, that didn't happen while he was traveling around being the Avatar, because he hadn't really started that yet when he got frozen into the iceberg. So the airbenders much sort of, like, traveled, like, you know, they're called air nomads. That's the thing. They're called the air nomads. It's, because it's the water tribe, the fire nation, earth kingdom, and air nomads. So they have maybe some earth temples, and that they just sort of float between them, and they see places along the way, maybe, that they could, they've got those flying beasts, so they could, like, travel around to a lot of places. So maybe they're just like the friendly travelers that sort of float through all the different places.
You just triggered something in my mind, and it was talking about the threat of the airbenders to the firebenders. They have the power of the sky, which, as we know from an undescript scene of Korra, is a pretty important thing in this world, to have the power of the sky. It's seen as being very dangerous to other kinds. So perhaps that was what they were referencing. You know, you're talking about their flying beasts. It's what brought me to that. Because they're pretty much the only nation we've seen thus far flying, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. They're the only ones that can do that kind of travel with the bison, I guess. Or at least so far. I mean, in general, Katara, you know, tries to put her little Katara spin on this and says that it's, you know, Aang's destiny to have run away before the Fire Nation attacked, because he was more needed at this point in, you know, in time, you know, to pay attention to her or whatever. Like, but what, do you think that the kind of the world needs him most, you know, now? Or, because in the opening credits it says, you know, when the world needed him most, the Avatar vanished. Do you think that she's right about it being this? I mean, this world does believe in, you know, fate and past lives and all that kind of stuff. Do you think it is Aang's destiny to be in this moment rather than have lived his life at the time he was meant to?
I think that's sort of hard to decide, just because if he had been around, would all of this have happened in the first place? But at the same time, it does make a lot of sense that he was discovered when he was, when things are probably at their worst, so that he could stop it and help everybody.
Mitch, how about you?
It's hard. It's really hard, because to me it's almost just like I think it would have almost been better to have the Avatar around, even if it was just a waterbender, which isn't supposed to be a knock at the waterbenders. It's to say that the airbender didn't have their turn, I suppose, it being there, which,
well,
I'm sure,
like,
is another.
Aang had died and then there'd been another one straight away.
Yeah, I still think that would have been better. I really do. It would have broken what Atla tries to present as the balance of the nations and the world, and that, like I was just saying, you know, like the airbender wouldn't have had their turn to do things and teach people of their culture and solve things their way. It's all about that four-way balance, or two-way if you're going, you know, air, fire, earth, water. But then again, it's even harder just to say that I want the waterbender, because, I mean, if we're believing in the destiny of the show, we have to say that if Aang was still alive, somehow escaped that Fire Nation business, he wouldn't be able to stop all that stuff. He had to meet Katara and Sokka to be able to do that. Or he had to have Zuko chasing after him to encourage him to do all he's doing. It's almost like it's a really weird catch-22, and it's kind of like the butterfly effect too, I suppose.
I mean, there might have been other literary people reference in that time. You know, other people in that time that could have helped him. But yeah, it is one of those.
Well, no pressure, but your enemy to teach you what you need to know. He's going to learn all the types of bending so that he could, you know, in a summer do what takes years of work, right? So I think that that's an intense pressure he wouldn't have felt. He would have probably felt more anger if he had witnessed all of the airbenders being murdered. But he wouldn't have done that. He would have died. He would have fought with them. You know, he's even said that. So it's pretty much like we're in this destiny because it's the only one that's going to ever happen. And there never is going to be a parallel universe in Atla for good reason, because it would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys again, too. It's, how is Aang so convinced that he's the Avatar if A, he's never bent, B, he's just trusting the words of, yes, his parental figures, but of other people? He's never really had any means of confirming it, though, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess that they know about the Avatar spirit because, yeah, I mean, obviously, again, like, I mean, all I'm going to spoil about Korra is that The Legend of Korra is the next Avatar's story, or another Avatar's story. You know, and she definitely already knows that she's the Avatar when you pick up her story.
It's a girl. I'm just kidding.
Okay. I heard that voice. I heard you say, oh, Natalie. I was like, oh, God.
It's a girl. And I will say that, yeah, that she definitely knew she was the Avatar by discovering that she could bend other things, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like, oh, you're the Avatar because you picked a toy. It's like, oh, here's some water, here's some fire, I can bend things, if you know what I mean. Like, it's it's pretty cool. But like,
looks at the fact that he was able to ice bend himself into that giant iceberg.
Yeah, which might have sort of involved all four things, like kind of just like, oh, heat, water, air, like, you know, like, I don't know. But
particles.
There's something spiritual there. I assume that they do know. Aang definitely is the Avatar, guys. Like, don't worry. It's not like, yeah. But I don't know. That's a good question. Like, you know, why they kind of knew just because he picked some toys. Where did he pick from these thousands of toys? Do they show every airbender baby this, like, room full of thousands of toys to check if they're the Avatar? Like, is that a thing? Like, I was a bit confused about that.
That seems really inefficient.
Yeah. There should be a magic quill like Hogwarts.
How do they trust, or a sorting hat, I suppose. How do they trust that these objects are going to work? I mean, how many times could they have really practiced this in, like,
not they, for the last, like 400 years or something, like, you know.
Right, they have, because they only ever have every other 400 years to check it. So how long was society going that they could really check this kind of thing? Like, Aang would have probably been maybe the second Avatar to come as fruition, to come in fruition because of this or something, right?
I don't know how long their history is, but yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's really kind of funny. And we do kind of know how long the past goes back, Natalie.
I can't remember.
You could probably guess, I could say that much.
I mean, I know the story of the first Avatar. I just don't know how long ago that was, if you know what I mean. I can't remember how long ago that was.
Well, I'm just judging it by how many Avatars that we've kind of, I suppose, witnessed in a certain fashion. And that's
how
I...
Can't you just go back to that one temple and count them?
Yeah, you could. But it's not a good spoiler to say, like...
Pretty much.
Yeah, just like 110 maybe, like somewhere around there. I don't know.
There's a lot. There's a few. There's a bunch. So, yeah, I mean, I don't... Anyway, I don't know. Aang is the Avatar, apparently, because he picked some toys. That's good for him. Whatever. I mean, yeah, Mitch, did Zuko let Aang go this time around? I mean, yes, he did. Is that a question? I don't know.
It was a discussion point, not a question.
Oh, okay. The discussion point is, yes, Zuko let Aang go this time around. So we have that moment of him, basically, there's that moment at the beginning of the episode where he's like, I don't care about the crew, you know, the safety of the crew, I don't care about that. The only thing that matters is catching the Avatar, and the crew guy's like, dude, really? And then Iroh has to go make a bunch of apologies for him, and then at the end Zuko's like, no, crew, I will be a good person like I was when I spoke up to my daddy about killing all of those people. So what did you think of, I guess, Zuko letting Aang go? It's sort of their stories, I guess, coming together a little bit. What to expect happen in future if we're only, you know, 12 episodes in and Zuko's like, oh, whatever.
Well, I thought it was a little weird only because, like, Zuko wasn't a part of the conversation. Or am I just not remembering that he was there? He wasn't around when Iroh was telling everyone, so, like, he couldn't have known that the crew knew what was going on. Like, he wasn't aware that they were aware now.
No, so he's not aware. He's not aware that Iroh told the story. No, he just came back and was like, oh, I've remembered that I'm not actually a giant dick.
I just thought it was kind of out of nowhere, considering how angry he just was. But, I mean, I was very happy with it, don't get me wrong, but I'm just thinking about that now.
Yeah. Karen?
Yeah, it did feel a little bit out of nowhere, but I'm glad that it happened. And we figured out that he's been chasing the Avatar, or looking for him at least, for like 3 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, since he was 13.
I can't imagine, like, how he still has the drive that he does. And I realize that, like, honor is very important to him and all of that.
Oh, Karen. Karen, you don't realize. You think you know. You don't know. Oh, God.
Okay.
No, it's fine. It's just hilarious. But anyway, go on.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, you know, he let him go this time, and it... He's been so passionate about trying to catch him, no matter the consequences, up until now, that I just wonder if maybe he's getting tired of his mission.
I don't know if he's getting tired of it. I would say that he was possibly thinking about, like, especially hanging out with Iroh for that long. Like, Iroh is a bro. I think we can all agree that Iroh is not a bad person, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, he did kind of starve out nations before, as we've learned, which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, he was just doing his job, I guess, but he turned his back on that, or whatever it is that he'd done, he retired, or whatever.
It's a classic paradox, just doing your job, eh? Sounds like we're in the Nuremberg trials all over again.
Yeah, and, you know, so, I don't know, it might be that he's, you know, been thinking about what it all means, or, you know... I don't know if he's getting bored or whatever, but we'll definitely be exploring that. Like, yes, but he is very, you know, single-minded, basically, that he has been, that he's let people down, that he's been, you know, he's shamed, you know, he's gotten shamed by his father, and that he needs to restore his honor and be worthy of being the prince, basically, because he thinks that, you know, he's now unworthy, even though he clearly still believes in his own opinions, because he comes back and is like, no, crew, I know kill you for no reason. It's fine. We will not chase the Avatar today. You know,
Natalie, something important that we haven't mentioned, and it's that I didn't write in the show notes. This is kind of the post-mortem telling you that this is something we should talk about. I wrote lightning bends.
Happen in this episode?
That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Karen, what's your thought?
I don't know, but I was, like, really excited about it for, like, some reason. I just thought it was really awesome, and his hair was all sticking up afterwards, and he had this, like, kind of crazy look on his face, and it was just kind of awesome.
Was that Iroh, sorry?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's the first time you see that happen, is it?
Yes.
The lightning bending? Interesting. I didn't know that it happened that early.
I know. It's kind of like an Easter egg, if you ask me, because it's not noted.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys, there's another big Easter egg in this episode, Brittany and Karen, just so you know.
Was it the girl? Because she was, like, in focus for way too long.
No comment.
Yeah, okay, no, it was the girl.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about it, because I was like, all right, if they just wanted to show Iroh in the crowd, they would have cut this girl out who looks really into this fight.
Wait,
yeah. Natalie, I'm literally dying inside.
Brittany, which girl?
Okay, so when Zuko is fighting his dad, they show Iroh in, like, the, like, arena audience, like, looking at the fight, and he's off to the left, but there's a girl, like, in the front row, like, clearly really digging this fight, and, like, they would have easily cut her out if, like, they didn't need her. And I was like, this girl, let me tell you something, she's gonna come back.
I don't remember that. Okay.
Oh, Karen. Oh, God, you guys are such babies. Ah!
Mitch, I'll very quickly ask you, as subtly as I can, if if this Easter egg is correct or whatever, you know,
oh, I know
it
it's
may
correct.
Be.
Mitch, you've got way too quiet.
Mitch, do you love her, hate her, or like love to hate her?
Wait, you're
asking, if he answers that, he's confirming it.
Correct. I would be confirming that.
That's true.
So right, Mitch, I'm going to answer that with Natalie. I am dying inside once again.
I'm just going to feel really good about this and we can move on.
Okay. Brittany, did you catch that before we said anything? I have to ask that.
I guarantee you I caught it before you said anything. I was seriously thinking about it.
Interesting. Okay, well.
Any theories, Brittany, about this potential Easter egg?
I don't. I really don't. But I knew that she had to be important because of the way that they filmed it. And she was, like, enjoying it. I was like, who could enjoy this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The
things that we will learn.
So that's a really big, I suppose, spoiler or something to look out for if you want to go and watch the episode again, that you might see a face that might return in some form, some small way in the future, basically.
I was really into this episode, in case you couldn't tell.
You I don't were. Blame you. Yeah. I cried. I wrote that I cried on Twitter, and that's something I usually wouldn't do.
I really love it. I mean, I think that's – yeah, I'd like to sort of get every – Karen, you've sort of said that you kind of were a little bit bored and whatever by it, which means that we're not friends anymore, which is fine.
I thought I was your life partner, Natalie. We're life partners.
I'm really glad that I was on – I mean, I was going to be on one of the two, but this episode and then there's next – the two that you'll have next week are super important, and it's like a split right down the middle. I'm like, oh, would I want to be on? I mean, I didn't choose, this is my week to do it. Like, it's not like I picked and choose what episode I was on, but like, I was like, oh, this one's a good one, but oh, the next weekend's a really good one as well. Like, in terms of like character stuff and things. So
it
hurts
me to think that I probably won't be on that episode, Natalie.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. It's just, I know one of the newbies is going to have to be on, so you guys are lucky.
Anyway, moving on quickly. But next week is very, very, very good also. But, Karen, you were kind of a bit – I don't think you'll have that issue about, like, not expecting – about kind of being like, oh, this is kind of boring and, like, okay, there's twists and, you know, oh, there's whatever backstory. I don't think you'll have that same complaint next week if you happen to be on. I mean, you'll watch the episodes regardless of, you know, what you're on. Brittany, you had a lot of feelings about this episode. Did you want to sort of give them – you know, just give some general thoughts that we haven't covered yet or a paragraph about your emotions or whatever?
Yeah, sure. So, like, I kind of, like, squeezed in my little thoughts throughout of things that I liked, but I really, like I said, I liked the opening because I kind of knew that we were going in a darker direction, and I liked that this was sort of piggybacked with the boring episode because watching the other one, I was like, okay, like, we're still in, like, Avatar land, and I'm still kind of adjusting to watching it and trying to find, like, deeper stuff in it. But this episode really, like, solidified, like, yes, I'm on board to watch 2.5 more seasons of this. And I just liked coming away from that episode with that feeling of, okay, I am going to enjoy the rest of this. It wasn't – before, I was still – because I was a super fan last time I did Rewatchable, so I'd already seen the show, and this time coming on as a newbie, it was kind of hard for me to get into it, and I'm kind of glad that I had to kind of binge watch to catch up a little for this week's episode, so that I had already had, like, coming in, because I saved these two for this morning before recording, because I wanted them to be fresher in my mind, and when I got to this episode, I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm good to keep
You're
going
invested.
With this. I'm a little invested. I may not be 100% on super fan level with Zuko yet, but I have feelings about characters. Like, I'm annoyed by Katara. I'm kind of on board with what Aang's doing. I'm glad we got his backstory. So I'm starting to
Karen,
really get into
Zuko
it,
is totally
good.
Turning into the Logan Eccles of Avatar. He really
I've
is.
I've never seen that show, and I want people to stop saying that. No, Zuko is, he's the Derek Hale. I will say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's that too. He is. He's many
things.
That's
cruel. That's really cruel.
I don't know who any of those people are.
You don't know who Derek Hale is? Oh my god, no, sorry. But I'm assuming you don't go on. No, I'm assuming you don't have a Tumblr.
No, I do. I just don't. No. I don't. Hold on. I'm Googling.
It's from Teen. No. It's from Teen Wolf. Don't worry.
Oh, and I know who he is. Everyone.
He's too big on the internet. Everyone, even though if they don't know who he is, they're like, oh, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that guy.
Brittany, you should do one of those. I think it's already been done, but you should follow up. I think Selena's everything I know about Teen Wolf I learned from Tumblr, because it'd be funny if people were like, how does she not know Derek?
Yeah, no, I definitely should. I like Supernatural, Teen Wolf, Veronica Mars.
I don't watch any of that. I know so much about Supernatural from Tumblr. Like, I've never seen a single episode, and I feel like I know the whole show. But anyway, Karen and Brittany, favorite characters at this point in the show?
My heart wants to say Boomy, but I will resist.
I think in one episode.
I know, but he's like stuck with me, man. I don't know what it is about him. No, it's definitely not Boomy. I actually think my favorite character as of this week is Sokka, only because he like was so. I feel like he's being like sort of left out a lot, and when he was arguing with, it was last episode, which is kind of hard to believe. Yeah. But when he was arguing with Katara, I was like, you know what? This guy needs some love.
I liked the bit in, I wasn't on the episode, but when they stole the waterbending scroll, he's like, Aang, you've been tricked. She only wants to teach herself with the waterbending scroll. And she's like, shut up, Aang will get his turn. I'm just being me now. Like, it's, I love Sokka. Sokka's big, always big favorite
of mine. Yeah, he's kind of my favorite right now.
How about you, Karen?
My favorite character is actually Sokka, like, hands down. I think, you know, I really connect to his love of food, and he's just really funny. And, yeah, I think he gets the short end of the stick a lot. And I like that, you know, even though we're only 12 episodes into the show, I feel like he's really changed, and he's really kind of come around and changed some of his opinions and has become a better person. And he's not perfect all the time, but that's okay.
Yeah. At this exact point in the show, yeah, I would say probably Sokka or Iroh is my fave. But Mitch, how are you? How about you?
See, it's weird because I'm so partial toward Katara, yet I'm being awakened to her horribleness as you guys continue to reference moments where she's a horrible human being.
I'm so sorry, Mitch, but she's the frickin' worst. you wait until further on, and I will have so much more to say. She has some great episodes, honestly, and some great, like, powers and plots and stuff like that, but her personality, I don't want to shame anyone for liking Katara, but it's the kind of thing that I personally just can't tolerate. Like, I prefer people to be nasty on the outside with a good heart, whereas I think that she's kind of the opposite to that. So, I mean, I don't think she's, like, evil, but, like, I think she's selfish and nasty, and I just don't like her. But anyway, I think she's, like, too hung up on her own compassion. She, like, rewards herself too much for being, oh, I'm such a good person, and I'm so compassionate. Yeah. Anyway, how about besides Katara? You're allowed to like Katara. Maybe I'm just really biased against Katara, you know, and I'll try and look out for some nice things about Katara. But besides from Katara, who's your favorite at this point?
Iroh. Very, very safely, Iroh.
Yeah, Iroh is a good bet for everyone, I'd say. Okay, let's move on quickly to the favorite scenes and lines, which, you know, all of the ones last week were a bit silly and funny, and everyone's this week's are a bit more, you know, hard hitting moments because this episode had a lot of drama. It had like a storytelling aspect. It was like very, you know, just dramatic and intense in a lot of times. So, Brittany, how about you, to go with you?
So my favorite moment was when Aang is, they're all, like, on Appa, and they're flying up to the Eye of the Storm at the same time that Zuko is trying to get his ship to the Eye of the Storm. And, like, Zuko and Aang kind of make eye contact, and they both just go their separate ways. I just thought that that moment was, like, going to set off the rest of the second half of this season.
Yeah. I will say, again, and not really talking about, like, where it develops and also not talking about and also, as I've said, I was never, like, hardcore in the Avatar fandom in terms of shipping and stuff like that. But the relationship between Aang and Zuko is incredibly important to me. Like, it's very, very, like, their interactions much more than the Zutara situation. And not in a boyfriend's way or anything, but you can have that if you want.
Maybe in a boyfriend's way kind of thing.
The chemistry and the interactions that Zuko and Aang have throughout the course of the show are very important to me, and I really, really like them. So, yeah, I will, hand you some claps for that one. So, yeah. Mitch, yours was that moment, was it?
Mine was, I mean, the people on this podcast right now can read this in the Google Doc. I wasn't about to delete it because that's something I wouldn't want to do retrospectively. So, should I say it, Natalie, to the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, Mitch has said that his favorite moment was that Easter egg that we just mentioned in terms of the thing that Brittany may or may not have figured out. So he would have made it pretty obvious that it was a thing by saying that this was his favorite moment of the show.
I'm pretty sure it was made obvious when I said it and there was just dead silence.
They have terrible poker faces.
Natalie, we need to come up with some kind of like filler music, like the Jeopardy song, that we can cue in whenever there's silence because we know that we can't say anything. But we also have to intersperse that in moments when we should say something when it's not spoilery, so that they can never really expect when the Jeopardy song is for a spoiler. If all, yeah.
So we should put in some moments where it's like not even relevant.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be best. Because they'll be like, so Aang is the last Avatar. I mean, that's not a spoiler. Aang is the last Airbender. I mean, obviously you know that because Korra happened. We like, Aang's the last Avatar, the last Airbender, right, guys? And then you and I would just play the music, like.
Or like one of those like studio standby screens. Yeah.
And it'll be like elevator music.
Yeah.
Like SpongeBob episode that they would do that in. Yeah.
Yep.
Karen, what was your favorite moment, given that Mitch's was spoilery and ridiculous?
Mine was a very serious one, actually. It was when Aang decided that he's going to forget about the past and start focusing on the future. And I just thought, like, it sounds really deep and, great and everything, and it is, but I think it came at a really important moment because he was so bummed out about what he had done, and it's hard when you basically blame yourself for everything to say, okay, I'm going to stop beating myself up about this and just focus on what I can do now, and I think that showed a lot of maturity for Aang.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that you've got to sort of make the best of the situation that you can't change, I suppose, Steve Rogers. But yeah, I don't know. It's anyone who listens to any of my podcasts that I'm on currently and who doesn't like Captain America must be so bored of me comparing literally to Steve Rogers, because it's been happening all year. So sorry about that, but that's the thing. But yeah, I mean, I think that he is obviously making the best of the situation. And I think he's a very repressed person, Aang. Like, so it's kind of good that he got that out finally. Like, literally, when he wakes up and he's like, do you want to go penguin sledding? And he's like, straight away, like, he's really excited and he's really happy all the time and makes the best of the situation. And he clearly is very repressed about what happened to him. And, then it comes through in the nightmares and now apparently it's all, fixed or something. But he'll probably still carry it around forever, but it is nice that he got a bit of it out, I guess. Mine was pretty much Zuko's entire flashback, which I don't know if it's a cheat, but like young, sort of sweet baby Zuko, being, and just learning his story, Iroh telling the crew his story. But if we're going to narrow it down to a very specific funny moment, the bit where at the very start where Zuko's like, no, I don't, I don't care if you all die. We're chasing the Avatar. And the crew guys just kind of, like, raises one eyebrow, like, what the hell? Like, I don't know. I just... Sometimes I find, like, the physical humor, like, in this show amazing for an animated show. Like, it's really... the comic timing is really good. So, yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed that. But on a whole...
Oh, my favorite comedic timing moment is the cough that happens, especially in the Boomy episode.
Oh, you know, like, a joke will happen and then it just...
My favorite thing.
There were a lot of good one-liners in this one, though, in terms of funny things. Lots of emotional moments as well, but instead of picking a sad Zuko moment or a, you know, Iroh sort of special Iroh moment, I went with the whole bit at the end of the episode where Sokka and the fisherman are stuck in the storm and Sokka's like, I'm too young to die. And the grandfather fisherman's like, I'm not, but I still don't wanna, which I found hilarious and true. But when I was watching this with my friend, she was like, yeah, these grandparent fishermen, like they're really smart and sassy, because both of them had some hilariously, like, kind of funny and practical lines. Because Karen, you picked one of those as well.
Yeah, I don't know exactly who she was, but, you know, just the grandma lady when Aang and Katara were like, yeah, we're going after them, we're going to save them. She's like, I'm staying here. Like, yeah. It wasn't even a question. It was just like, well,
that was the, I think that was the wife of the fisherman, the one who refused to go out on the boat. Yeah. So, yeah, she's like, I'm staying here. And I just like that aspect of humor, I think. Mitch, what was yours?
You ask quizzically for a good reason. It's more of like, I guess, here I go again, another video game inside joke. But it reminds me, it reminds me of a certain line from the game Star Fox, Nintendo 64, because there's a line that's said by Slippy. Slippy is a frog, and this is how ridiculous I think this line is that I'm about to say. It's Slippy gives instructions to Fox flying his starship to say, do a barrel roll. And that line is kind of a big trope to say, like, things were kind of delivered in the wrong way in an extreme moment. And that's exactly what I felt when Katara goes, whoa, hot cinders! Because she's kind of just saying it, like, matter-of-fact. Like, that's kind of cool. And to me, I was just like, you could have gotten burnt. And she's just like, yeah, hot cinders!
Oh, my God. All right. Brittany, you've actually chosen to be serious about this.
I know, which is probably, and normally
you're raising the tone of us, which is
nice. Well, because I'm normally the person who's like last, like the rewatchable for Pushing Daisies. I was always an Emerson quoter. Like, I was always the person who chose the funny lines, and people always went serious. And here we are, roles, tables are turned. So I chose Iroh, who at the end of like his story for Zuko. After they were like, oh, we thought he got his scar in a training accident, and he's explaining everything, and he says things will never return to normal, but the important thing is the Avatar gives Zuko hope. So he's sort of letting the crew know, like, yes, we have to follow him on this wild goose chase because it's sort of the only thing that is keeping him going, which is so sad.
Yeah, it is. It's very, like, you know, hope. What does that even mean, though? Like, is that in a good, like, good way, or like, you know, is it making him worse because, you know, could it give him hope in a different way? I don't know. It's, you know, do we want Zuko to be hopeful at the moment?
Yeah, because it's like, even if he succeeds when he goes home, it's not gonna matter, I think.
But yeah, that's pretty astute, I will say that. Like, do you think the Fire Lord actually cares about Zuko bringing him the Avatar?
No,
I would say that would be an astute assumption. It's not like, yeah. I want to give a quick shout out to also Sokka, because I keep forgetting this line, but I never get over it when I do remember it, which is when he was like, I also had a crazy dream. Momo could talk. And he's like, you said some very unkind things.
that was my second choice, and I stuck with the serious one.
Good for you, but I wanted to give the Momo line a shout out as well. We've got some feedback to go on, but if we want to have anything quick from anyone about just thoughts about the episodes, anything we haven't covered, any notes anyone made that we haven't quite covered yet. So how are you feeling, everyone, after these two episodes about the show, basically?
I think I'm going to have a hard time pacing myself now. I think I've reached the point where, like, two a week is going to prove to be a little hard.
I've been doing four. I've been keeping them all, like...
Well, because I think you have the advantage because you kind of know a little bit ahead of time, like,
when I'm going to be switching off. Yeah, that's
so
true.
I'm trying to keep it, like, I mean, luckily I kind of knew ahead of time last week that I was, like, going away for a weekend, so I knew I wouldn't be able to record, so I, like, had that little, like, backstop of episodes. True. But I think this was the episode where I'm like, I'm going to run into trouble now.
Well, you could, yeah, I was going to say, you could just watch the whole season and then go back and rewatch the episodes before you're on, but I suppose that defeats the
purpose. Yeah.
Oh, trust me, the first time I watched this, it was so fast. It was so fast.
Yeah, I could see just, like, hunkering down and not coming for daylight.
Yeah, Karen, how are you feeling about the show at this point, like, in this turning point moment?
I'm really excited. I mean, like I said, I didn't feel like this episode was necessarily a turning point per se. I think, you know, once we get through season one and I look back on it, it probably will be, but it didn't scream like super important to me. But saying that, you know, Avatar continues to take me by surprise in that it's really good. And I mean, I knew it was good because obviously like you and some of our other friends have been telling me to watch it forever. So I knew that it was going to be a quality show, but just the humor and the animation and the way that the storyline is developing gets me really excited. And yeah, I have to sort of like forget about it sometimes because I just want to hunker down and watch the whole thing and not come out for daylight.
See, it's funny to me that you mentioned that so many people have mentioned to you that you love the show, etc. That's what we thought for Pushing Daisies.
I know, and it was such such a disappointment. And
I felt so let down by everyone in the world.
Why? What?
Here's the thing.
What?
Here's the thing. Ever since I had this thing where everyone on Rewatchable kind of started hating Pushing Daisies, sometimes even super fans. It was weird.
By the end? Or?
Yeah, like hating. It was intense.
Okay.
And I'm glad we're not feeling that about Atla, but here's the thing. Obviously, we're going to be a little bit more cautious before we pick the next show, whenever we do that. And I'm always very, very cautious when I start a new show, because I make sure that I find out from the person why I would like it, not just that it's good, what are the elements that I'd like about it? Because if someone told me Pushing Daisies has a really intelligent plot, and if I saw that wasn't happening within the first couple episodes, I probably would jump shipped. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's all about careful selection of adjectives when describing a show, whether or not someone would like it or not. You really have to be honest, because you could have put someone through a lot of pain, a la Pushing Daisies.
Is it that bad? I've seen the first season. Anyway, I don't want to. Let's
Rewatchable confession time. Okay, Karen, you're going to kill me for this one. I never even watched the finale. I think
Karen's like silent.
Silent,
I'm not saying anything.
Karen didn't watch it. You didn't watch it either?
No, I definitely watched it because my OCD will not allow me not to watch it. So I don't understand you right now is basically what I'm saying.
I read a recap of both episodes, the two episodes, and then I kind of skipped through the player of them to see like what they looked like physically.
Oh my god. Let's move on from Pushing Daisies, because this might upset the people who like it. Like, you know, like...
We've already done that. We're down that road already.
I'm sitting here. It's fine. I still like them.
Oh, no. Okay. Poor Brittany. I'm talking for all of us. Like, you didn't actually like it at all.
Oh, no. I liked it.
Let's do the feedback, shall we, for this week. We've got a few different ones. We've got four, so we can each take turns. Shall I... Karen, you do the first one. Karen, okay. If you want to go ahead, and then I'll go, and then Mitch, and then... Brittany, you can do the last one.
Sure.
Okay, so this is from Hypeable Post, and it's from Susan, and she says, I completely agree with Danya. There is no way I could ship Aang with anyone. He's 12, and even if it was shipping in the same age group, it's still creepy. If any of you guys have read The Promise, I cringed every time. I have no idea what The Promise is, but...
It's a good thing.
It's
a good thing she doesn't know anything about it. No comment.
Yeah. You don't have to know anything about it. It's a comic book, a canon comic book, basically, in this world.
Oh,
and
okay.
There are ships.
Yeah, there are definitely, there's definitely shipping, and I agree with that cringeworthy. I don't think I could not ship. It's not like, I don't like the idea of, like, people going and writing, like, porny fan fiction and stuff about them at this age, if you know what I mean. Obviously, they become adults, but not during the course of the show that we're watching. So, like, I don't know. People definitely ship Aang with people, even though he's 12. But the others are only, like, Katara's 14, Zuko's 16. I mean, 16's not too young, I suppose. But they're not, you know, they are early teens. So, yeah, I mean, it's less weird than shipping ponies, I guess. But, you know. But no, I don't actively ship Aang with anyone, and I also cringed in The Promise. Whoever Susan is, I agree with you in terms of that. But I appreciate, you know, the dynamics and chemistry of various characters, but the actual relationship aspects were a bit, weird. So, Mitch, how about you?
Well, I mean, I kind of given a lot of my opinion on the shipping and the like, and it's I think a little bit stranger in cartoons, like I said, rather than real life people, because real life people are often played by older actors, a la Glee, Teen Wolf. But a show like Atla is it's like a 12-year-old shipping with a 14-year-old, and it's very pre-puberty, and it's very creepy.
That's the thing as well. Like, I feel like at this age, for example, if it was Katara, she's 14 and she might be just post-pubescent, but Aang might be pre-pubescent, if you know what I mean. So that's kind of.
If we use puberty as a standpoint for maturity.
Yeah, if you use puberty as a standpoint for, like, having a romantic or sexual relationship.
Yes.
Kind of weird.
And Sokka's definitely, I guess we could say, starting puberty just from, like, looking at him and hearing his voice, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I'd say Sokka's definitely old enough to have a girlfriend. I think that's fine.
Like Aang, 16, yeah?
Yeah, he's 15, 16. Aang, yeah. Bit weird. Okay, yeah. Anyway, so my feedback was from Jasmine, also on Hyperball, saying, so about the waterbending animal, like the equivalent to the sky bison and the dragons, Natalie said how even now there isn't really an animal for it. The thing is, though, the waterbenders don't have an animal origin story like the other elements. Their connection is with the moon and the ocean, which is explained heavily at season one. And I suppose that is true. Yeah, don't want to spoil too much there. I suppose that is true about the moon. But I suppose not everyone can have their own personal moon to carry around with them. And yeah, I guess that's fine. It's just a bit weird that it's the only one that doesn't have a specific animal.
Well, it's almost like they kind of broke canon or rhythm in a way. The rhythm of the animals being the origin as opposed to an element being the origin. Well, I guess that you could say that the animals are part of that element if you wanted to stretch it.
I guess. I don't know. It is interesting. But yeah, the water bending origin story does happen. I did sort of forget about that, and it does happen. So yeah. Mitch, do you want to go ahead?
Shipping, and I am sorry if you mispronounce your name. I've never seen a name other than Quinn that starts with a Q, so this is going to be really fun. Keong, I think I pronounced that wrong, right? That was kind of cool, actually. Said, I've been thoroughly enjoying the Atla Rewatchable podcasts and look forward to them weekly. One thing I'm curious about is how old the various superfans and newbies are and how old the superfans were when they first watched the show. So taking on the first one, I am 22, and Brittany, how old are you?
I'm 24.
Karen?
I'm 25.
No.
You're only 25?
I know, she's a baby.
No! Oh, yeah, like you can say that, Mitch. I'm 20. I'm turning 26 in November. I'm almost 26.
Oh, I thought you were only a year younger than me. I'm 28. I turned 28 in April. April.
And then that's for who's on this podcast. You guys probably know how Danya is at this point, wouldn't you?
I think she's similar to my age, actually. Yeah.
Caitlin.
I think and then the others I don't know about.
Caitlin's a couple years older as well, I'm pretty sure.
And Mikhail, I think, is 27, if I had to guess.
Wow, I had no idea any of this. I just turned 24. Like,
Mikhail's going to be so offended if I just guessed her age wrong, because I know it, but it just...
I don't know any of that.
Anyways, so that's how old the superfans and newbies are. And then how old are the superfans when we first started watching the show? Nicole, I know, was young. I'm going to guess like anywhere from 8 to 10 with her story of, you know, starting to watch it and shipping Zutara. I was...
If you think Nicole is 27...
Only because she's
8 years old.
Only because I remember being shocked.
She hasn't been out that long. That age gap doesn't make any sense, Smidge.
Oh, that's fair. Okay. No, I was going off of the fact that I remember her telling me she was older, yet me thinking that naturally she'd be younger. That was the best judgment I had. I don't know. But that's a good point.
That's fine. We'll find out that for you guys later. But that's
yeah. Fine. But regardless, I don't know. I was kind of just like watching it in syndication on TV for first season and then spoiled myself a little bit too much and then really watched it again when I was like 19, probably. Natalie?
I was probably 24, maybe 4 years ago when I first watched it. No, we wasn't in the I never saw it on television. I saw the DVDs hanging around at like the DVD store I owned and I knew it was like a thing. But no, I watched it, downloaded it, got recommended it from various sources, downloaded it, watched it at home.
I really just kind of fell into it. I remember I did watch the pilot air. Isn't that exciting? I can think back to that and think of like when I saw like Zuko coming by in his ship and stuff. Like I thought to myself, obviously, as I still do now, this is a much more mature Nickelodeon show that I'm used to. And I'm really, I think, special for being one of the super fans that could have followed it all the way from the beginning in some kind of fashion.
Well. And
then we have Kat. I don't know how old Caitlin was for her Zardania, because I can't remember in particular.
Yeah, Karen, obviously you guys haven't watched it before, so this is your first time, Karen and Brittany. But yeah, I don't know how long ago the others watched it, but that you can ask on an episode that they're on, maybe.
Right. And then another part of this comment was, I cut it out because it's a little bit long, but that's okay because we love feedback. We've gotten a lot of it this week, probably because we said we weren't getting any. So please continue to do more of this. It was actually a joy being able to collect all these. Then another thing that Kong said was that they were wondering what we thought of, obviously, the age gap we're talking about between what the independent audience might be and what we were / are watching the show. So as a general discussion point, do you guys think that we're in an oddity in watching Atla at our age, or is this something you could see other people doing? Not that you know other people do, but could see.
Definitely not an oddity. I think it's something that if you're in like a fandom or a Comic Con or like an online community or like, you know, I think that, you know, knowing that people follow like animated shows is not that weird. I don't think like a casual adult observer would really be like, oh yeah, that's that good, if you know what I mean. But right. You know, they're like, what, you're watching like a kid's anime show? But like, for example, my brother and sister-in-law, their kids sort of watch it and they're like, oh my god, we love it. Like the father and the mother, they're like, we love it. Like, you know, just like it's teaching them such good stuff. And and, you know, we enjoy watching it as well. So I think once you've seen it, you know that it's watchable, if you know what I mean. But I think that it is probably a little bit weird to, like, an outside view. But I think within the wider community of people who understand fandoms, I think it's not unusual at all. I do think that we, you know, we as adults who are watching this as, like, a, you know, a serial, you know, storytelling show, that we're probably, you know, critical of elements of it that, you know, need to be there for it to be in the market that was actually designed for, if you know what I mean. They didn't design it for us to be watching. It's, you know, it's not Hannibal. It's not designed for a bunch of adults, you know, to pick up on, you know, super clever things. And, you know, it needs those kind of episodes and heavy handedness sometimes for it to actually be accessible to children, or to be accessible to a show, you know, to be aired on a network that's not actually airing it, you know, week to week. Next week on Avatar, this is happening, like something that can just be watched casually. It is going to be specifically designed to have those things in mind, which is slightly annoying for people who want to watch it like it's a, you know, a serial or a, you know, but it still works.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, a big difference between a show, like, we're very respectfully saying that adults do watch My Little Pony, and that is definitely a show intended at younger females, yet many adult males like that. So, I mean, that's probably the type of anomaly that Kyung was referencing in saying, like, is it probably to that equivalent, I guess. And I think we can answer that with a good old hearty no, we are okay. Not that no, we're not okay. We're just that's not the way of saying it. We are not alone. Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to phrase that in a way that's not like prejudicial against people who would watch My Little Pony, because it's each their own, I guess. But it's like, how there's, do we justify what we're doing? I think
there's definitely more of a stigma about the way that My Little Pony fans have acted about My Little Pony, you know, and they're kind of, there's been some nasty stuff happen in terms of, you know, adult male My Little Pony fans wanting the show to be like catered towards them, and that telling them that the like little girls aren't the real fans of the show, etc. And I don't think that there's been that much of an issue with like the Avatar fans versus the children. I think that it always took off more with adults for Atla, and that they do cater to the adult fan base, but I don't think it's in such a strange way as the My Little Pony situation.
Mm-hmm. And, well, as newbies, do you guys find it ever weird to be like, okay, I'm going to watch a cartoon, or are you just like, okay, I'm watching a cartoon?
I don't really find it weird, because I think that, well, I still love cartoons. Like, don't get me wrong, I wish that the cartoons I watched as a kid were still on, because I would watch them all the time. But aside from that, I think that if the writing is good enough, then, you know, of course it's going to attract older people to it, just like how I feel about Percy Jackson. I love Percy Jackson. That series is meant for 9 to 12-year-olds, and I'm 25, and it's one of my most favorite series of all time, and I think it's just the quality of the writing that does it. So, you know, if you can get past the sometimes childish aspects of it and really look at it for, you know, the deeper meanings, if it's still rewarding to you, then there's definitely no shame in liking something that's meant for kids.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree 1,000% with Karen.
Yeah.
She makes me want to read Percy Jackson, to be completely honest.
Oh my God, do it. Yeah, it's so good.
I'm always curious, Karen, but then I see, like, stuff about it online that's like, this is really bad, and I don't know what to do.
I mean, I know nothing about the fandom, but the books are really good.
Okay.
And the movies are questionable, as I understand.
Not to me.
So then can we trust your recommendation of Percy?
This is what I meant earlier, that Karen likes things that people think are bad. And I don't necessarily know if the Percy Jackson movies are bad. I don't really like Logan Lerman's face, but...
Oh, that's a shame, Natalie. That's a big shame. Karen, do you like Star Wars episodes 1-3?
She likes the third one the best. I hate all Star Wars.
That's funny. Natalie.
I hate all Star Wars. I said it at the beginning of the episode. I said all Star Wars. I hate. I loathe Star Wars. I could write you an essay as to why. I have very specific reasons for not liking Star Wars. I think it's overrated, and I think it's really terrible. But anyway,
I would read that essay. That'd be interesting, actually.
She watched all of Star Wars in order to prepare for seeing Annie, the Star Kids show, and her favorite out of all of Star Wars was Episode 3.
Oh, that's rough.
Karen. It's okay.
And even, I hate all Star Wars, and even I know that Episode 3 is, like, everyone's absolute worst horror story, if you know what I mean.
I don't know. Episode 1 was pretty bad. I don't know.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for throwing me under the bus
Karen's
twice.
Karen's enthusiasm for things that I don't necessarily like make me happy.
Yeah, I love it. Like, it's absolutely true, Karen. I'm not laughing at you. I love you.
Like, Karen went to a certain concert a few weeks ago, and I was so happy that she was there.
A certain Slim Shady, please stand up. I still find it hard to believe that you loved Eminem at one point. Now I get it. Like, you opened up my eyes, Karen. You really did.
Karen's really good at loving things, because she's not awful about it. She's like, I don't know, it's sweet and it's nice, and I can't hate her, even if she loves weird horror movies and stuff. Like,
oh yeah,
bad
weird horror movies, that's a whole other
movies.
Oh, that was low.
What?
I know you're talking about Mortal Kombat.
I am.
Yeah, you do like Mortal Kombat. That's
kind
of strange.
I tried to watch it. It's unwatchable.
No, it's not.
It's unwatchable. It's so bad. I'm sorry.
Well, then I'm really interested. Okay, here's the best transition ever. I'm really interested to see if Karen's going to like the M. Night Shyamalan Avatar.
I've already seen it and I did like it.
There you go. So
freaking racist. You're not allowed to like it.
I mean, granted, this was before I knew anything about the show, so as a standalone.
No, the big issue is.
I feel like it wouldn't be proper to do this as our last episode because that would really go out with a not a bang, but with a womp. But maybe we should do like some kind of like it's Christmas time, so we're gonna bash the M. Night Shyamalan movie for you guys.
Doesn't it end at the end of the first season of Avatar? Like, doesn't it?
Good point.
Like it doesn't end at the whole end of the series. It ends at the first season, so that
probably would be relevant. I think so.
It's so racist. It's so like. I just don't understand. M. Night Shyamalan isn't even a white guy. How did he look at Sokka and Katara and like, yeah, I need to cast some really freaking pale people to play those? Like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, and like, there are people in the Avatar world who are definitely meant to be white. Like, you'll meet some of them. I don't think anyone that we've met so far is meant to be classed as white. And I was just like, oh, okay, so all the Fire Nation people, you've realized that they're ethnic of some sort. That's fine. But, like, yeah, the Water Tribe people who are, like, the brownest skin people in this show, yeah, you're just going to cast some really pale people for that? That's fine. Whatever. But, yeah, it
Sokka, Aang.
Yeah, the pronunciation, and they make Sokka unfunny, and there's so many problems. Anyway, we shall watch it again at some point, I'm sure.
I would love like a DVD commentary or something that we could do. That would be really fun.
Fact, you guys might not know, Darren Criss auditioned for Zuko in that movie. And people were like, he talked about it on Twitter because he's a massive, massive fan. As I said, all of Starkid really love Avatar and there's a lot of Avatar jokes in the shows. He auditioned for that and then after, like, he was talking about it on Twitter and there was afterwards, he's like, yeah, after the movie came out, I was kind of glad I didn't end up being involved with that movie in any way. And then people were racist to him being like, oh, you can't play that role. You're white. And he's like, yeah, I'm actually half Asian, but that's fine. Whatever. That's fine.
That brings up we'll talk about this when we get to any kind of movie discussion, of like, could you have a white person in The Wiz kind of deal? Like, is it okay to have, Disney's blind casting as they do for like every movie ever nowadays. And,
for voice acting and stuff. I mean, not just
voice acting. Like, I guess you could even say, once again, I remember having this discussion with you, Natalie, about the first Captain America, how I was confused how he had an African-American man in his battalion. You were describing to me that was just his compassion, and I'm getting you stuck on Steve Rogers stuff, which is, I know, a dangerous category, Karen.
That element of the Howling Commandos is meant to be, it was meant to show that. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, we're going to suspend our disbelief. In World War II, the African-American troops had their own individual battalions, and the fact that he had, like, different races and stuff in his Howling Commandos showed that – because they have that bit. Not sorry, but, yeah, they have that bit where they're like, oh, we've thought of some people that could be in your team, and he's like, yes, Soz, I already picked my own, if you know what I mean. Like, it is actually a purposeful element. But besides from that, the race issues in the M. Night Shyamalan movie are something that was huge at the time when it came out, and I'm sure that we would talk about them if we did a thing about the movie. But, yeah, Sokka and Katara, definitely not white. That's all I'm saying. So let's move on from there. We should ask our fans,
too, just to, like, kind of write in if they have an opinion on something that they want us to do with the movie, commentary or just a general episode or nothing at all. Like, you know, doesn't hurt to have you guys' –
just pretend it doesn't exist. That's also fine.
I feel like I have to watch it, though, at some point.
No, you don't.
Not yet.
I want to watch it yet. Now that I've seen, like, after I've seen the show, I want to go back and see if I hate it.
Yeah, I think you could watch it after the first season, but...
You can. There's not a single season 2 spoiler at all.
Yeah. Do we want to go on with the first, the last bit of feedback, before we finish up here?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have one email from Kristen. And it says, I'm a newbie watching Avatar for the first time along with your podcast, and I'm really enjoying it. Even though I really enjoy the show, something has been bothering me. Have any of you super fans ever questioned, or is it ever explained on the show itself, how firebenders can conjure fire anywhere and anytime, but waterbenders, earthbenders, and airbenders can only control their elements? Which is a very good point, because I was wondering that about waterbending. More so because you see Katara kind of like pulling water out of nowhere And
her pocket. She has it in her little purse.
Thing. Oh, she does?
Yeah.
She carries a bag. She carries a bag of like a little sat, like a
whale flask stone.
Or like a skin thing of water.
Okay, I definitely missed that.
Yeah.
That was something I was wondering.
The commenter is right in terms that fire is the only one that they can produce. Obviously, air is everywhere. You can pull air everywhere. But yeah, fire. I mean, I don't know how to explain like how, you know, I think water and earth, they can't just pull, like, they can't just create something from nothing, if you know what I mean, but...
Well, it's about matter. It's because you can...
Yeah,
you can,
I think
you can combust molecules, but you can't create water out of them, I suppose.
Science. That's the thing. I think it's because fire comes... Yeah, you have to make fire anyway, whereas water and air... Fire doesn't just exist, if you know what I mean. Like, it has to come from somewhere, and...
This is like Charmed, you guys, because Piper could freeze time because she slowed down like molecules and stuff, and then she could start blowing things up because she could speed it up. Same thing.
Okay. I told you Karen likes terrible things.
You have not seen it. You cannot say that.
I've seen random episodes of Charmed. It's
good.
Okay, if you say so. One day we'll watch Charmed. It's fine. I don't know. There is a lot explained about where the bending comes from and what, like, the different, like, drives of each bending is, if you know what I mean. Like, each element is sort of, it comes from a different place in you. And I don't really know how to describe it without, like, explaining the entire situation, and that would sort of be a spoiler. But, yeah, there is sort of stuff going to be explained about how you can, about why the bending is different for each element, basically. But I do think creating fire from nothing is because fire has to combust, basically. They control heat. They can make heat. So if they, like... basically make something spontaneously combust, and then they, like, whether it's the air or whatever, and they have fire. But water, you can't just make water. Like, she could make water out of steam, if you know what I mean. If there was a lot of water in the air, she could pull it together. So that's sort
well,
of...
Well, we've already seen thing. That she could control the temperatures of water by making icicles.
Yeah.
She froze that, like, what's his name?
So, like, if the water was really, like... If the air was really moist, she could probably pull together water from the air, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I just never noticed that satchel, so that's good to know.
Yeah, no, she does have, like, a satchel of water that she carries around.
Gotcha.
And then you'll see some sort of, you know, earthbending stuff as well. It's, like, little things that they learn how to do with different, you know, elements of earth and stuff. But I don't know. There is more.
Oh, Natalie, that was a good drop. That was very subtle. I appreciated that.
All right.
Jeopardy music.
We shall go now and leave you guys to your, you know, binge watching or whatever it is that you're going to do. But, yeah, you can reach us, as I said earlier, on the Rewatchable email or Twitter, which is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, Twitter re_watchable, or this post on Hyperball. And if you've liked the episode, feel free to go on iTunes and leave a review saying that you liked it or whatever it is, because if we have nice reviews, we can stay on iTunes. So that's
good. But we're still waiting for one for Atla, and we're giving them that leeway still because we're still early on in the show. But I'm always looking, and it'd be really nice to just kind of wake up one morning and, you know, have that surprise. So make me happy. Come on, guys.
Okay. Well, make Mitch happy. But in the meantime, we shall see you guys. We shall see you guys next week, or another crew of people will see you next week, or maybe some of us, but probably not me. Some of them might see you next week, some of these fine people, but we shall see you in general as a podcast next week for the next two episodes. But for now, we'll say bye-bye. So bye from me.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.